Kia ora whanau. On today's podcast, I've got the executive producer and writer of The Panthers. If you have not seen it, go and see it. Noah Finau is on the show today. Please make sure you go through, follow him on socials. He's the man, but also great podcast. I hope you guys enjoy it. Make sure you go over to the Patreon. Hook me up. All right, here it is, whanau. Let's go. All right, today, man, I am excited. Today on the podcast, my good bro, Noah, a.k.a. the Tongan Magic Mike is on the... is this what... Bro, sorry, bro. Sorry, normally, you know, I'll break it down, bro. But, you know, so why do they call you the Tongan Magic Mike, bro?
Bro, I don't even know, man. I've never heard that before. People are like, that's just fans, I guess. You know, the myth of Noah Fire. Nah.
Tawa's finest. How are you, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm out here in Tawa. It was a beautiful day today down here in the capital.
You're out of lockdown, right?
Yeah, we're in level two down here, but because all my work is still happening up there, I'm kind of in lockdown as well. Like, I can't do anything because I'm waiting on Auckland.
Oh, sheesh. Well, anyway, bro, for those that don't know who you are, bro, who are you, Maji?
Yo, my name's Halafanua. So, you know, most people call me Noah, though, from the beautiful city of Wellington. Born and bred in Tawa. Spent a lot of my time out these ways in Tawa and Porirua. So, yep, these hills, Rangituhi, Whitirea, they're the ones that kind of, I've grown up in the shadow of those two maunga. I'm just from Wellington and got into the film and TV industry when I was like 17. So been in the game for a while. And like most people from Wellington, when you're in the game, you eventually come to the crossroads when you have to move to Auckland to level up and advance in your career. So yeah, been in Auckland for the last kind of like 3-4 years and just on the grind, just on the hustle.
Bro, and yeah, it's been cool to see, bro, because when I look back to you, I'm like, oh, I know who this bro is now. Like, because, you know, I only saw your name, bro, like, come up. And I knew your face, but I didn't know the name, G.
Yeah. No, yeah, I got into it randomly, too. I didn't even know, because I studied dance. That's what I like, studied. And then, I don't know, out of the blues, like, my agent, who's still my agent to today, yeah, like, my number and rung me up and was like, yo, do you want to come and do this audition and everything? And bro, the only kind of auditions at that time I'd seen were like, I was like, whoa, what's this? Yep. What's up to?
So sorry to interrupt you, bro. So what's your favorite trumpet flavor, G?
bro, probably vanilla. I just keep a standard A. I'm pretty,
pretty, what a basic bitch, bro. That's a bit of a basic bitch one. Yeah,
you gotta keep it simple, man. That's how I move.
Is that your first gig, G, ever?
That was my first audition, and like I got that ad straight away. So I was like, oh, man, this is pretty cool. Like, you know, it's pretty easy, because I was like, wow, just rocked in, did the thing, and then got it like a week later.
Yo, and did you think it was always going to be like that?
Bro, it was like that for like my first like 5 auditions.
Wow.
Like, I got like that ad, and then I got kind of like 2 TV series and another couple of ads, and I was like, bro, this is crazy ass. Like, I thought acting was easy, but I had an afro at the time. And then, bro, like Samson, I cut my hair and the TV gig stopped. Shit.
Bro, so here's my next follow-up question for that, bro. Where do you get the best baby oil, bro, when you go overseas, G?
Bro, you got to get it from your mum's drawer, mate. Coconut oil.
Can you import it over, bro? Can you take it over when you go overseas to dance, team?
Yeah, we do. We did. I never really got pulled up on it. We always took our own, like, everyone had their own, because I was like, Tongan oil is better than, like, Samoan oil or Cook Island oil. But that Tahitian, is it Manoi? Is that Tahitian? I don't know. That's pretty good. That's pretty up there.
Yo, where did you go, bro, with the Whitirea performance art when you went, performance group, and you went all over the show, G?
Yeah.
Where did you go to?
Oh, bro, we went heaps of places. They like, over kind of that time of dancing, it was like Italy, Canada, Holland, Belgium, like the UK, China, Greece, Taiwan, Yeah, bro, America. Bro, it was mean, like, because it was in Porirua too. So, bro, you're only like 18 to like 22 cats from Porirua on the other side of the world, man. That kind of shit opened your eyes, eh?
That would have been. I mean, because, you know, like people, like Porirua is the same as South Auckland. And, you know, you only know so far. Like, bro, I never even went past the Bombay Hills until I was like 20.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Heaps of cats. And like, for me, when I went overseas and dancing, like, bro, when we started here in first year, I hated doing like a pukana. Like, I was like, man, I don't want a pukana. But for some reason, bro, when I got overseas and then you start performing and you just see these cats like laughing at you, eh? Because you're doing your thing, you just find it, eh? And then you end up thinking you're bloody pretty weepu and rocking out the one-eyed pukanas and everything.
Fuck, that must be pretty buzzy too, bro.
Yeah.
Because you're figuring out whether they're like supporting you or they're just laughing at you, you know?
And bro, often we would be overseas like doing parades and we'd be doing like, some of us would be in pew-pew, some of us would be in like ears and stuff like that. And the like parade crowd are like, oh my gosh, blah, 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 like talking. And we're like, yo, like we can understand you. I can hear what you're saying.
We're like, bro, so they would talk and they would be like, they don't know if you understand or not.
Yeah, because they'll be like, I thought it was cold in New Zealand, kind of things like that, because we're in a pew pew and everything.
Yeah.
And they were like, yo, nah, we wear normal clothes in New Zealand and we can speak English. Like now.
Was that one of the craziest misconceptions of like what overseas people think of New Zealand?
Yeah, I think from there, because we would be all around in like small towns and stuff. When you're in the main cities, it was all good. But like when you go into smaller towns, kind of like the equivalent of going to somewhere like bloody Huntley or something, you know, we were going to some random towns that don't really see. And then they'll only know, like, when they would think of brown, they'll only think of like black Americans. So then when they'd see us, they'd be like, you guys are black, but you're not the black we've ever seen. Yeah. So, but they were like, bro, every stop we went to, man, they buzzed them out. They loved us. And kind of for me, growing up in New Zealand, when they would come up to us and ask us all these questions of like, what does this song mean? And what does that mean? And what are you doing this? It was like, shucks, these guys like think my culture is cooler than I think it is. So that was kind of the catalyst for me to kind of find out more about not only Tongan, but kind of like my little corner of the world.
Or did you notice, like people, like you say that, like people kind of appreciate the culture overseas? Because you did that road trip thing and you went down to the south of the south of the south.
Yeah.
People down there don't really respect it as much, right?
you're a good one, mate. That was cool as well, man, because I'd never, like, bro, growing up Tongan, our only road trips was Wellington to Auckland and you stop in Wairake, that BP by Taupo, like, you know, that was our road trip. So it didn't venture off State Highway 1. So then when we started in Bluff and like zigzagged all the way up, oh, some of New Zealand is a beautiful country, man. Like, you got mountains down south and in an hour you can fly to Bay of Islands and it's like tropical beaches. Like all in the one, bro. We got a beautiful country, man.
And a lot of people don't appreciate what we have until they go overseas. And then you go to Australia and it's all brown and orange everywhere.
Bro, straight up. And even like when we would be in somewhere, like I remember going, like when we were in Italy and like our tour guide, it was just a random street, like a random, nothing special about it. And they'll be like, yeah, this street was built in like, yes, freaking 11, you know, it's like 1,000 years old. And we're like, damn, that's like older than our whole country. Like, you know? So, and they just got random, like, just, you realize, wow, we're a young country, man, compared to the rest of the world.
What a gift, eh? What a gift, with Fitirea, like giving young people from underprivileged places like Porirua and Tawa and all those places, giving them the, yo, we're going to go over and experience what it's like everywhere else.
Yeah, man. It was honestly, like, for me, it was one of the, like, part of, like, it's been, I've had a pretty cool run, like, you know, had a lot of blessed and privileged opportunities. But I always look back at, like, my time at Fitirea as kind of the thing that unlocked my kind of curiosity for Pacific culture and performance. Because I didn't even want to do it, bro. Like, to be honest, it was my mum that made me do it.
Yeah, mum made you do it, right? After she saw that you did some good shit at school, right?
Yeah, bro. My report, bro. You know, a good one, man. Like, oh, yeah, it was my school report. I only said I had a disappointing year. Like, Holy Club was my only highlight. Yeah, so they enrolled me, man. I wanted to do tourism because that was like where all the girls were going to be and you could travel.
And then, oh, okay. So, or do they travel at school?
No, like, because in my brain, I was like, I wanted to travel and like meet girls. So I was like, if I was a flight attendant, I could travel, I could get free flights, go overseas, and party in Ibiza. But never happened.
Bro, did you feel like a bit of a sellout not going to Tower College?
Not really. Because I grew up, like, I went to.
That sounds like a bit of a sellout thing to me, my bro. You know? Yeah,
I mean, at that time, a lot of us were going to school in town, like, for rugby, which my older brother, he was the one that went to town first. And, like, pretty much once Jerry Collins went to town from Porirua, that just opened the floodgates, and everyone that wanted to make it in rugby went to the city schools.
Bro, why does Norths get such a, you know, like, everybody loves Norths, G?
Bro, because they're freaking bullies, man. Like, bro, they're just, nah, because of Jerry, bro, like, Jerry is like a king around here, man. Like, he's the one that inspired a lot of us in terms, because I remember as a kid seeing that dude running when he was, like, maybe 9, like, jogging the hills of Waitangirua. Like, you know, we'll be going on garage sales and going to the flea market, and this dude's running and his dad's driving the car. So, like, the myth of JC, like, started young, man, and he made sure that when he opened the door, he held it open for everyone to go through. Bro, Norths, I remember Norths in 1 year had something like 13 Super Rugby players in their club team. Like, bro, it was unfair. Like, they had Christian Cullen, Peter Alatini, like, bro, everyone, John Schwager. It was just unfair, but I guess, you know, being like a mean-ass club. But let me just say Tawa won it this year, so.
Oh,
but Norths won it last year, I think. I think Norths were the champs last year.
Bro, but, you know, like, you know, when you see someone, you know, like, they have that, when you look at God or Jesus and you have that aura around them, you know, that purple aura that you're just like, far out. Did you see the same thing when you saw Christian Cullen for the first time?
Yeah, G, straight up. Yep. He was my first, like, starstruck person. Yeah, bro. Because, bro, he was the man back in the days, you know? Straight. Like, even watch those highlights now, he was still the man. But, yeah, I remember when I first met him, he was my first proper, like, oh, fuck, Christian Cullen, what's up, bro? And then to go to his house and everything, that was me.
Sheesh. Because, bro, that lineup, when they had him, Jonah, and then Tana.
Yeah.
Bro, they should have won that shit, but they didn't, G.
Bro, just timing, eh? When we won the NPC, it was mean. We wagged school to go to their parade, but, like, bro, we should have won. We should have won so many more titles, man, because those dudes were... Because we had those dudes, and then it was, like, Jerry, Rodney Soyalo, and Chris Marsoy, when those guys were, like, bullies, you know? Those dudes were monsters.
It was, like, pretty much an All Blacks team, bro. You had Ma as well.
Yeah, we had Ma'a. Bro, I don't know what happened there. Like, because then we won it. When the Hurricanes won it in 2016, it's not like we had, like, superstar team.
Bro, I'll tell you why, G. Okay? And I know you'll appreciate this reference, bro. Remember when Gary Payton and Karl Malone went to the Lakers, my G?
Yeah.
That messed the... I know you're a Lakers fan. And that messed the whole dynamic up.
Bro, exactly. It's the dynamic. Bro, that was just wrong too, eh? Seeing, like, it's a weird thing. Like, when you see Karl Malone in the Lakers jersey or Gary Payton, or even the Rodman jersey looks weird in the Lakers.
Oh, yeah, when he was there for, like, 2 games. Before he got let go. But, yeah, you know, like, it was that, yeah, sometimes with teams, it's that dynamic between, you know, you gel with somebody, right?
And
you Is that the same with Mickey Magsiva? With you?
Bro, what the trippy one of that dude is he was the
freaking... He was on a trumpet ad.
Yeah, bro. And I haven't seen him since then.
Yo.
Like, that was a trippy... I remember me and him, like, when we met up the first time, and I was like talking to him, and we were just like, "Wow, what a buzzy one." That's like, what, 17 years later?
Right. That was crazy.
Yeah, because the Manga Siva brothers as well, being Wellington boys and like cracking it in the industry, you know, there's not many from Wellington that like Islanders especially. So for those dudes, bro, from down here, they're like the Wayans brothers, you know?
That's a great analogy, actually.
Yeah, man, they were doing everything. So when I got to work with Mickey, especially being my first like acting gig and to see the director being an Islander, I was like, yo, and from Wellington, like, bro, that was just a good Lord, I reckon. Like, yo, that's what you can do one day, man.
This is the way you need to go now.
Yeah.
That was the day. Bro, what's a crazy behind the scene backstage thing that you've seen at Te Papa, bro, that nobody else has seen, dude?
Bro, that's out of the one. Bro, how much Googling do you do, brother? Man, you're mean.
doesn't everyone do this? Like, this is what pissed me off more than anything. I'm just a bro in Clendon, my G.
Bro, the best thing at Te Papa, bro, those back of house things, man, are the weapons. You go to the weapons, especially kind of like the Pacific and Māori area. Bro, there are like Taiha and Patu and Mere there with blood still on it, you know? Like, it's pretty scary. Like, you got to do a karakia and everything when you go in just to like make sure you're safe. But those are definitely the main ones I like, is the weapons. And then randomly, yeah, you know, like Kiribati and stuff, like, bro, like, I don't really know much about them, but their weapons and like armor was next level, eh? Like,
wow.
You know, like, kind of like blowfish and like stretching the skin over like their helmets and stuff, and it just looks scary. Even though blowfish won't do anything, but maybe it does, because you know, The Simpsons, isn't The Simpsons with the blowfish?
Bro, yes. So I ate some of that stuff when I was in Japan, G. I was like, I'm going to be like Homer, G. I'm going to put my life on the line.
Yeah. So, but nah, they've got some mean weapons there, eh? And, bro, I learned more at Te Papa than I did at school, right, to be honest.
Bro, you're only there for like 3 years, 2 years,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Yeah, bro, but it was Noah's tours, mate. Those were the ones.
Oh, brother. So let's get onto this TV shit too, bro. Bro, this karaoke high thing, right? How buzzy?
Hey?
No, I'm not stupid. Of course, I'm not going to watch it.
I'm not wearing that thing, man.
Bro, I'll tell you what. Something happened though. Like, I was following this chick on there on TikTok, bro.
Yeah,
and she was on it, G. And she was like, "Yo, I used to be on it." And then there was Alina.
Yeah,
she's like huge on TikTok.
Yeah, bro. And it was buzzy when I, because I hadn't seen, I think maybe Karaoke High was the last acting gig she did.
Yeah.
Because, bro, when we rocked up first day and she was there, we were all like, oh, snap, it's the girl from the market. Like, and, you know, we were like, oh, shucks, she's mean. And she was a real cool chick. But, I didn't see her. I didn't see her since then. And then I just randomly, she came across on the old For You page. And then I was like, oh, shucks, it's Alina.
Yo.
Straight out to dreadlocks.
Yeah, and she's killing it too, bro. Yeah, she does those voiceover things, and I'm like, damn.
Ooh. Yeah, because she was running like a coffee cart at TVNZ for years.
Oh, wow.
And she had her own like little coffee cart, so I'd only bump into her randomly, like if I was doing another project, and I'd rock up there for an interview or something, and I'd be like, yo, what's up, sis? Like, and she was running her coffee cart.
Bro, what a great place to run a coffee cart, bro.
Yeah.
To be honest.
And then they rebuild and build their own cafe and everything, so.
Because I think, and then that took you onto the Small Black stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of started getting some traction, eh, bro?
Yeah, that was like doing, so I went from, the Small Black stuff was mean, man, because like, man, I'm a mean kicker, but I can't like run, pass or tackle, so. If I could do those things, I'd probably have cracked it. But, bro,
even Superman had kryptonite, G, you know?
But
it was just all of the things that make a good rugby player, bro. Yeah. But it's cool.
But if I could kick, I should have played NFL so I could just kick. But, that was mean, bro. Small Blacks was pretty much like the closest I could have gotten like to being an All Black, you know, like, but I had the World Cup longer than All Blacks.
Yeah. Let's go. That's mean.
Yeah.
So did you come through, because you were at the performer or their, you're doing tours at their thing, right? And then did it, is that how it works?
How I got onto Small Blacks?
Yeah.
Nah, like, I didn't. It was, because Jason Farfoy was doing it, and then I did another TV show called Paradise Cafe, and the producers were friends, like, they knew each other, and then when they were looking for a new host, just over, like, a coffee, and the producer was like, oh, man, you should hit up Noah from the kid show that I just finished doing, and then, bro, he texted me, I caught up with him, and he was, like, asking me just rugby questions, and I knew them all, and he was like, oh, yo, so you actually are a rugby fan, and I was like, yeah. So then I just ended up getting onto that, and helped me up, and that was me.
Bro, that's mean, brother. Can you explain to me, bro, what's the Tongan Ninjas, G?
Yeah, bro. There's a bunch of broke-ass Tongans who wanted to go to the Sevens and couldn't afford tickets. So we just decided to enter the cheerleading competition, eh? Bro, and we did that the morning of, like, the deadline. Like, I think the deadline was at 1 o'clock, and we did, like, our audition video that morning. Woke up hungover, and I was like, bro, let's do this fucking video. So we did it, and it kind of grew its own legs, and we ended up becoming, like, semi-famous at the Sevens.
Yo, that's buzzy.
Yeah, bro.
So how did it all come from the Small Blacks TV stuff and then, like, progressing into, like, writing, bro?
Well, I was doing Small Blacks, and then one of the directors from, like, one of the TV shows I did, Danny Mulheron, I kept in touch with him, like, just from my very first acting gig. Like, he was the director of my first TV show. And I just kept in touch with him over the years. And then, like, my missus works in events, and I had to go to, she was doing the, like, Edinburgh Tattoo, you know that thing? They do it's like a big marching event at the stadium and all that shit. But it's like a big freaking event that happens every kind of, like, 5 years or something. And because she was working on it, like, the last night was, like, bring your partners. And I was like, fuck, I don't want to go watch that shit. It's all just, like, old white people to go watch that. So I ended up having a blaze, and I was like, yo, went and watched it, sitting there. And then a bunch of Tongans walked out. And I was like, what the fuck is this shit? So then after that, I went and caught up with Danny for lunch, and I was telling him about it. And I was like, oh, it's like my church brass band at the 2011 World Cup. And he was like, what do you mean? Told him that story, how we kind of went and played there. Then me and him just started writing that story, because while I was sitting there, I was writing on my phone. Like, I was like, oh, this is a cool idea, and we'll call it the Highlanders, but, like, spelled H, Highlanders. And I was, like, sitting in the crowd. My missus was like, what's this thing? I was like, nah, I've got a mean idea. I was, like, sitting in the stadium writing it, and then I pitched it to Danny, and he was like, where did that idea come from? And I was like, oh, from my church band. And he was like, bro, write the real life thing. So then I started writing that real life thing, like, what, maybe 2015, I think. Yeah, and then kind of that's the writing was just on the side with him, and I was still doing Small Blacks and stuff. And then that script docs kind of just grew. Just that's the only thing I was working on. And then Danny got on to Jonah to direct that movie. And they were like, oh, we need a writer. We need a Tongan writer. And he was like, oh, I've been working with this dude, Noah. He hasn't written anything, but he's written this movie. This is his script. And they were like, oh, yo, it's all good. Sweet. Get him on. So then jumped on Jonah. And then Jonah went from that to Panthers, pretty much.
Was Jonah, like, when you wrote Jonah, seeing those real, like, it was a, you know, true story.
Yeah.
And did you learn that transferable skill over to Panthers, where you had to take historically correct information but make it interesting and make it relevant to the people that are watching it today?
Yeah, yeah. Jonah was a mean lesson, and because I just talk shit. Like, that's what I'm good at. Like, I'm just good at talking shit. So I
feel you, bro, on that one.
Yeah, so, you know, you take what you're given and you try to maximize it. So I was just, I could write, but I never really had the structure kind of side of things. So working on Jonah with Pip Hall and Danny, I learned that sort of structure, technical side of writing. But even though doing Jonah, because Pip was the lead writer, it wasn't really my swag. Because I was like, oh, yo, now that I know that and I've kind of got docs, I think I can do it like a different way, like how I want to write stuff. Like, because I wouldn't say I'm like a film like geek. Like, I haven't watched Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter's or any of those kind of shit. Like, I watch like most of my cousins just like Blood and Blood Out, like Boys in the
Hood. Straight up, let's talk about Blood and Blood Out and how much of an effect that had.
Yeah.
Blood and Blood Out is one of the fucking finest movies ever grace the fucking the VHS.
That whole era of movies like that, like around that time, there was
Above the Rim.
Above the Rim. Yeah, bro. Like
Power One. Shit.
Yeah, those are mean movies. And like, those are the kind of movies that I would like, when we're in these conversations in Jonah and stuff, I'll be referencing them. And like, I'd buzz out because Danny would have no idea what I was talking about. And I was like, what the? I thought everyone knew these.
Right. You'd be surprised, bro. I pulled up a Birdie reference from Above the Rim one time to these two basketball people. And they were like, I don't know what you're talking about, Birdie. And I was like, you know Birdie from Above the Rim? Even a Billy Ho one from from White Man Can't Jump. But get nothing. And I'm like, okay. You guys need to get some. Even a Wanabi one.
Yeah,
from the air up there, my bro, like that, you know.
See, those were mean movies. And funny with Birdie, bro, because Birdie was one of the references for Ice, like for Bueller.
Yo,
just for
think of that,
of just like kind of, because Tupac was one of the most like lovable baddies, bro. Like even like, you know, him Bishop and Juice, you know, like him, his baddie character in Juice and like Above the Rim, bro. He was mean, like just a crazy. Because he's not big, he doesn't have the body, but he just had like crazy smiles and like, there's like, yo, and especially, you know, Above the Rim when he pulls the blade out.
That bit was like, holy shit. Like, bro. There was so many, like, now that you mentioned that, bro, like when I interviewed Bueller, I didn't actually bring that up, but that's a great reference. It is, it's very, very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when I was doing like Jonah, and then I realized like, shucks, we're not like pulling from the same kind of memory bank. It affects and influences the creative. So then when I managed to like link up with Tom, bro, straight off the bat, we were like referencing the same things. And I was like, oh, yo, we're cooking something pretty, pretty mean here. But still scary because, you know, it's such a big story.
Yeah.
But then it was just like, man, walk into the pressure and the like expectations and just kind of go from there.
So like if we're going to talk about Panthers and how that came through, what was the process to start, G? So like when you the first time you got the call up and you're like, sweet, what's the first thing that you had to do? Because a lot of people, including myself, we don't know the actual process.
So I slid into Tom's DMs like a few years ago. Like, because there was just word on the street that Tom Heron was like cooking up this Polynesian Panthers series. So I like slid into his DMs and he hit me with the scene.
He hit me with the scene just like last week.
He's a busy man, but like he hollered back like maybe 3 years later.
Oh, the stale ones,
So he emailed back, he emailed me, and bro, it went to my junk mail. Like, but for some strange reason, I was up with my son at like 1 a.m. and I just decided to go through my junk mail and do a clean up. And I saw his email and I was like, oh, shucks. Replied to him. I was like, sorry, bro. It was like 3 weeks late. But I got in touch with him, caught up with him, and he sent me the scripts that it was at the time to have a read. And I had a read of it and I was like, oh, man, shucks, I'm not really vibing with it. It's all good, though. Like, it's mean. Like, it's cool. And then he goes, oh, sweet. So that's what we've got at the moment. You write what you would do. And then so I just met up with him and had a jam. I managed to write some stuff. And then pretty much I sat with him for my first kind of training run, like just a test run with him. And pretty much within that first kind of like 15 minutes, we came up with the Diggy Dupe character.
Yep.
Because I was like, yo, like, man, we need to like figure out a way of getting information out like quick and in a mean way. And then it was just like, bro, what about a rapper? And then it was like, went from, it needs to be like Scribe, but like young, a young version of Scribe. So like if Scribe had a son, that's who the character would be. And it would be mean because Scribe's dad was like connected to the Panthers. So it was all that kind of buzz. And then that was the first thing. And as soon as we kind of wrote that beginning and like those, that verse of what the rapper would be, I knew we were on. I was like, and then it pretty much went from there. Like once we kind of clicked and I gave my version and ideas of what I thought it could be and what the Panthers could be like I didn't really, cause I was like, man, a lot of the Pacific, films and stuff that come out are like critically acclaimed, but I wouldn't say they're street classics. Like, you know, you're not talking about them in the garages and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Well, even though they're mean, but like, you know, like I know from my mates and stuff, like none of them have watched like 1,000 Ropes or like Vi or anything, but those are like critically acclaimed films. You know what I mean? Whereas for my, if you got all of my, like my kind of world and go, yo, watch 1,000 Ropes or Three Wise Cousins, guarantee all of them are going to go watch Three Wise Cousins.
Yeah.
Just because it's kind of more of our language. So I wanted to, so that was kind of, I was like, man, I want to make like a Boys in the Hood, like Above the Rim, Baby Boy, like street classic, like Singleton Buzz. And Tom was all about it. And he was like, yo, sweet, let's go down that road then.
And how was that, like pitching that song?
It was mean because we know, because like I was saying, we were pulling from the same like memory bank. So when I would say something, like I'd be like, you know how, like on Juice, how really Juice is kind of like Othello?
Yeah.
So it has the like under, the through line of like a classic, like a Shakespeare classic, but then it's like street. So it, if you're a theater loving person, you could watch Juice and still get the drama and the like, the nuances of freaking storytelling.
Yeah.
But if you're from the street and you don't even know Othello, you can still watch it and be caught by the Shakespearean freaking art. And it was like, bro, so just trying to figure out a way of doing that. And because we knew that, like Juice was a big reference of kind of making sure that the like art of it is the like the actual foundations of the storytelling is solid. And then let's just chuck in the sugar after that. Like, so it was pretty easy, to be honest.
Did you feel the, like, I mean, bro, there's a lot of risk with that shit, AG. Like if you, and I've said it before, bro, the risk and reward of that was fuck, there was a lot of risk because, bro, you mess it up. This is an important conversation that, honestly, a lot of people don't even know about. And that's what I thought was the cool, bro. I went out and educated myself about what the Panthers were before, you know, like when I got straight, when I was in high school, because I was like, fuck, I want to know about this shit because we don't get it taught to us.
Yeah.
But in terms of what you guys did was making it, you know, like a hood classic, but also with that education, that's a very, very thin line, bro.
Yeah. I think, well, for me, it was lucky because I fucked up the Jonah movie. So it was like, sweet. I was like, I already know what it's like to stuff up like a mean story. So it was good because all my mates and stuff were like, bro, that was freaking dry. Like, but mean that you did it. Like, and that's the beauty of, you know, the boys, because they'll just say, tell you like it is. So they were like, so I knew kind of already what it was like to go through like and do like a mean being Tongan. This is like the first Tongan superstar. Like it was still cool, but it wasn't like groundbreaking. Like, you know, people have already probably forgotten about it. But so with the Panthers, it was just knowing that it was me and walking into a fire. Like, I think this is Doc Rivers, he said like pressure's a privilege. So not everyone gets to feel that pressure of what it's like. So
pulling the Doc River quotes out here, bro.
Yeah, so it was cool to just be like, nah, just lean into it, man, and don't be scared of failure, really. Because I learned from Jonah, even though some people wouldn't have liked it, I learned. Like, if it wasn't for Jonah, I wouldn't have gone on to Panthers. And if it wasn't for Panthers, I, like, you know, leading into the next kind of opportunity.
did you feel, bro? There's some other references, bro. I watch it, but one of the other ones, especially with Ice, bro. Now that we talk about it, because I thought when I was, bro, you'll understand some of the things I'll say. When I was talking to you, I was like, I wanted to say this, but I get a lot of vibes, like some Belly vibes, dude.
Yeah,
have you seen Belly?
Yeah, bro.
Bro,
yeah.
The hood, the most hood classic ever.
Right? Yeah,
and then on top of that, a lot of Wire shit.
Yeah,
like I'm watching it and I'm like, bro, this is some Brody shit right here. Like, I get that, some Brody shit, you know, and some Omar stuff in there, and yeah. It's all kind of like, and then he adds what he wants to Ice.
Yeah, bro, and Beulah's a freak, like, bro. Beulah is a freak, in terms of his approach to his craft. Like, that's been one of the best parts of the process, is working with such like amazing talent and just seeing, especially for like our young poly talent that came through, to see like the level that you need to be at, like people are rocking on. But bro, not many people see. Jonah was another one, like with Belly. I was like, bro, Belly, you know, like the opening scene, how he rocks up and freaking gets out of the car and his freaking eyes are all funky and it goes in the club and the like shots like this, like that's a mean opening. And just got met with Blake Steers. Okay, cool.
Fuck. But like it's those types of things that we are all accustomed to. We know, like, the people that you were trying to get at.
Yeah. But we watch all of those. Those are all the shows and the worlds that we, like, love, you know? So it was kind of trying to find that style. Like, Singleton's storytelling technique is something that I'm inspired hugely by. Yeah? Like, he's goat for me.
Yeah. Like, bro, how was it finding the factually correct stuff and like being able to, because a lot of things in the Panthers is just like a representation of what might have happened.
Yeah.
But then you have the Panthers who are actual people that were cast in shadows of these actual people that are still alive today.
Yeah.
And like, how was it like juggling that, bro? Because that seemed like that would be hard, bro.
Yeah, it was, bro. The Panthers, the OGs, made it easy for us. So we hung out and like interviewed, and they came on set, they read the scripts and everything. So like Wirli Lolohia, Melania and I, Alec Toliafua, Miriam Arohihi, Ness passed away recently, rest in love, Tingi Ness, like they were all involved in it. So we would like explain stuff to them and then they'll be like, yo, man, all good. So like, for example, kind of the end of episode 2, when they cut the power to the town hall and Muldoon is like saying his speech, like that never happened. But the idea of that was from the Panthers. What really happened that inspired that kind of story was the Panthers went up to Waitangi when the Queen visited and cut the power to the town so that the Queen couldn't speak. So they cut the power to the whole town so the Queen couldn't, like, say her piece at Waitangi because the microphones and everything died. So that kind of is what the seed of our version of it was. So we did, like, a lot of that sort of stuff.
Because if you were to put that in, that would be a whole different narrative of, like, a whole different – that's a lot going on all at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like, shucks, we've got to introduce the Queen. Like,
yeah.
And then – so it was like, nah, let's just keep it with our Muldoon character being our main guy, and then let's cut the power off here, and then that's the seed of that. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff where we creative kind of reimagining of the stories. But like the thing is, a lot of the stuff that seems random actually happened, and the stuff that seems normal didn't happen. Like, you know, so. There's a number of like, but then even there's stuff that we didn't even put in there, like where the Panthers bloody blew off the doors with dynamite at the Central Police Station. We're like, bro, that's terrorism. You know, imagine, bro, that's terrorism. If 19, 20-year-olds did that now, that's just straight terrorism. Whereas that was like protesting against like illegal or like you know how they just lock us up for no reason, you know? But man.
Did you feel like having young actors, you know, you had the young ones come in, it was easy to kind of create and mold them, as opposed if you've got, I mean, you had a bit of both, but these young actors that you had in, how was it writing for them, bro?
But it was mean, because it was also scary, because, you know, especially with the Will character, we didn't, they had such a, he's such like, got so many levels and layers to him, you know, he's like a university student, but he's also like part of the street life, but he's also like descended from nobility. So all of those kinds of different influences have to like come across through this character. And the same with kind of Milani, you know, like this kind of goody good Samoan girl, but it has to have a bit of an edge to her as well. And we knew straight away that we wanted to cast like young, like actually their age, so that you can get that kind of naive think that they can do it anyway. Like, whereas if you had like us on Kerikeri High when we were bloody 25 playing 17-year-olds, it just don't look right, you know? You look like you shaved in the morning before you came to set. So
you could tell though. Yeah, you could really tell that they were new. And not in a bad way either, that naivety was a thing.
Yeah.
Especially in the Will character, more than any other one.
Yeah. And bro, Demetrius, bro, I don't even know how the hell, like, he was on Jonah for like 2-3 days, and I met him on there, and I was like, fuck, this kid's like, you're onto it, man. Like, you're asking the right questions, and you're like fascinated. So I just remembered him. And then when we were writing, I was like, we've got to get that dude to audition. We've got to get him to audition. So, oh, gee, sorry, bro, my daughter's just got here. Can I just quickly go open the door?
Yeah, bro, you go for it, G. Yeah, because I felt like the Will character, he had a lot going on and like hitting all of those things, you know, the university student and the church life and pressures from home, pressures from the street, pressures from ICE. That's a lot to take on for a young actor, bro.
Yeah, man, and he killed it, bro. I'm so proud of that dude. And I guess like for him, it was mean being surrounded by guys like Bueller, and like Frankie and Roy Billing, the guy who played Muldoon, and Jordan Mooney, Jordan Vahakolo, Chelsea. Like, those are all kind of OGs in their own right in the game. So being able to surround them with the right pieces and tools for him to win, and he just applied himself as well. Like, he was like, yo, nah, I'm going to go. And I guess it showed the effort that he put in, because, you know, he got selected in the Rising Stars, which is a pretty awesome opportunity for him. So hopefully, you know, it's on to bigger and better things for him.
I think, yeah, I hope so too, because he did an amazing job.
Yeah, man. Like, bro, he's only young too, so the world is his oyster.
The one that, and I'm going to bring this up, bro, because this is a talking point in my house, G.
Yeah.
Okay. The one that I was thoroughly impressed with, like, 100%, holy shit, was Jordan.
Yeah.
I was like, because I know the bro from, you know, doing social media stuff, yeah. and I've been on Maya a couple of times, and we converse over DMs and stuff. But, bro, like, he took that and ran with it straight like John Olumu, bro, like in 95, bro. He was just not, I was impressed, bro. Like, what did you see in him early that you were like, cool, we're going to get him in?
Oh, bro, we knew it was going to be him pretty early, like, just because he's got that energy, you know? Like, you with Jordan, he's kind of those ones that you either love him or hate him, you know? He's a polarizing figure in kind of just our pop culture, man. He's got, bro, I like, salute that dude with how he handles his pressures, you know? He's got haters and he's got lovers, and he just manages to focus on the positive. So just that energy, and I knew that, like, and Tom and Crystal, we knew that he had it in him. He was honestly a bit like cautious and nervous at the start of how to kind of get into it. But bro, I remember like one of our very early meetings, maybe it was even our first meeting with him and Bueller. Like, Bueller was in Finland or something, and they were doing the whole what up everyone, and then Bueller was like literally staring. It was me, Mickey, Tom, and Jordan in the room, bro, and Bueller just goes, so there. This is it. This is the end of us being friends. Like, when it's working time, it's fucking on. So no fucking around. Like, and he kept that like ice energy with him. And then I think pretty much from that point Like Jordan was like, oh, yo, sweet, let's go then. And bro, I think Bueller's a beast, bro. He's like our Denzel, you know? So for Jordan to kind of hold himself in some of those scenes when it's just him and Bueller, he bro, holds his own, man, and he makes those scenes freaking fire, man. He totally seems hissing.
Bro, I'll tell you why this has been a talking point in my household, okay? Me and my missus watched this. And the end bit, bro, you can tell me if I'm correct or not. You could say, hey, bro, we left that up to the audience. But at the end, bro, he's gay, AG. Like, is that what it was, G? Like, that would be, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sorry for the spoilers, anybody out there.
Nah, that one is just up to the audience, bro. Like, however they want to interpret it.
Because that last bit when he's in the hospital bed, bro, my missus is like, I was like, man, I'm pretty sure he might be gay. And she's like, no, you're being, and I'm like, no. Like, think about this for a second. And then she's like, shut up, you're all shit. Yeah. And then I was like, nah.
Nah, that's just up for interpretation on that one.
I was like, this would be the greatest fucking turn ever. Like, I'm like, damn, I didn't think of that shit. This is great. But anyway. Sorry, I had to ask you since I had you here.
It's good though, to have those, because that's what you want to do as like storytellers, is like just put these questions in the audience mind and have them thinking and talking about it and wait for season two.
Yo, can I now that we're, I feel that we're in the safe space at the moment, brother.
Yeah.
Are we good? Can I bring something up that a lot of my bros have been hitting me up about?
Yo.
Okay, and please don't take this the wrong way, G. Do we need to have the white people's their stories in there? I get a lot of that. They're like, why did they have the... Like, I get that you need some contrast. I get that. But I was like, I don't know, bro. That's what the brothers have been... That's what we talk about.
Bro, it was funny, yeah, because the thing about that 70s era was like New Zealand going through puberty, man. Like, we had a lot of things happening in that time of like the women's lib movement, like progressive youth, like this shit I didn't even know, like, you know, coming up, like I didn't know about any of this stuff, like, but that time. And then it was always just interesting because me, how I know Ponsonby and Grey Lynn is Rich, like I didn't know it as the hood, like, and then so knowing, flipping that, so now it's quite strange to see Islanders living in Grey Lynn and Ponsonby.
Yo, I was like that too.
What would it be like for to pluck a white person up and plonk them in the middle of the hood? But also, man, like with the white people stuff, bro, it was funny because I wrote like a lot of the white people stuff, like the arguments and the racist shit. Bro, I found that like a lot of funny. Like I was like, this is out of it being racist. Like you could like just, I was like, fuck, this is crazy, you know? Just being able to come up with that, like just in my brain going, oh yeah, as a Palangi seeing the world through this person's eyes, and then just like, shucks, true, that's messed up.
Because yeah, I was, bro, a lot of the bros said that to me, like, and it made me go, yeah, actually, do we? Like, I was like, yeah, because I get it from a film perspective, yeah. Like, it's the contrast, you've got to have the bright with the dark, yeah. And you've got to, no pun intended, but I'm saying like, you know, you have to have that to see what the other side of the argument, yeah, is. But yeah, half of it was like, bro, I just want to see what the Panthers up to be honest.
Yeah.
Sure, you know?
Nah, man, it was an interesting, like, it's an interesting debate too, because a lot of people asked us that too, but man, it's just kind of, you can't really talk about the 70s without addressing some of those other things too.
There's a lot to take on, you know, because you had the women's rights things, you had all the racism going on, you had the National Party and Labour Party thing going on, and there's a lot to unpack there, you know.
And also even that National Party at the beginning of episode 5, you know, like it's not often that we see old white people getting like fucked up, you know, getting wasted, because they don't really show that kind of side of things on TV. Like when they,
yeah, that's true.
But bro, if you've, man, I've been to some parties with some old white people, man, and they just as a great garage party. In fact, man, they probably do worse shit. Like when you go to those parties, man, they do some pretty, yeah, there's some pretty crazy people in those circles when money's just like, when they just got money.
Yo, I want to give a shout out to my bro Terrell, who did the I think it's episode 6, bro. He did the editing for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. What's that episode 4? The Street Fighter stuff.
Yeah, that's the one. And bro, I've had a conversation with him too, G, about this. Did you feel that was a little bit like it was a? Even he was a bit like, oh, I don't know, bro. I don't know if it kind of fitted, but I think it was a good palate cleanser, G.
Yeah, bro. That's the beauty of like when you can make shit up. But you're just like, no, nah, because I think like what it was is just like, I don't even know how we came up with that thing. We came up with that idea. But when we came up with it, it was around the time that the transition challenges were blowing up.
Okay.
You know, and we're like, oh, bro, should we just do something like that? Bro, what I wanted to do was have like journal on the rugby lines in it. Like, oh, you know, like, right. He's digging like a demented mole. Like,
far, bro, you're starting with the good ones, yeah. Brother.
But you know, yeah. I wanted to have some.
The maternity ward, yeah. That one. He's going to the maternity ward.
I wanted to like have that sort of stuff in it, but then it kind of just evolved into this like, oh, bro, like, let's just do like a Street Fighter fight. And then it went to, oh, yo, let's get that dude Terrell to do it because he's like the king of the transition stuff. And then he did it, and then it kind of just grew. And to be honest, that was just one of the random things that were like, yo, we're the ones that can make the call. Let's just do it.
Yo, it was quite, like, I was watching it, and then it popped up. He told me about it, like, when he was doing it. And then I was like, oh, that's cool, bro. Like, that doesn't really sound like your thing, Terrell, but that's fine. Yeah. And then when it came up, I was like, oh, I see what they did. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's the bit there, Terrell, that I could tell that was the bit there.
It was mean, too, though, just to, like, get someone like Terrell in, because normally, you know, you'd go to, like, a graphics person who actually does this shit for movies and TV.
Yeah.
But we're like, nah, man, let's just get one of the young kids that do this stuff and just give them a turn to just see what it's like.
That's cool, bro.
You know?
Because that was the thing, though. A lot of the production were Pacifica Māori,
yeah,
right. And so, did you learn that? Well, not learn that, but did your time on the SIS show and with Hanel and that kind of contribute to that?
Yeah, man. Like doing that was one thing that we knew straight off the bat that we wanted to like make sure, like in the same kind of way, like that Jerry did with the Korirua with rugby players down here. And as soon as he got a chance, like he opened the door for so we knew on through me and Tom were just like, yo, because we're pretty young in terms of like New Zealand producers doing premier drama. Like most people are a lot older than us. So we knew that a lot of our people are talented. They just don't get the opportunity or the shot to like prove their talent or just don't get a shot to jump in the deep end and learn. Like, you know, so it was a cool opportunity for us, like, to, and timing as well. Cause like, if we'd done this like 10 years ago, a lot of our people wouldn't have had the experience to be able to be HODs. Like, you know, we wouldn't have had the directors, like, but our DOP, the Cook Islander, like locations was Samoan, like our production designer was Māori Fijian costume, Samoan Niuean, like, and then us. Bro, it was buzzy because even when the actors would come in, like me, Tom and Crystal, we didn't even have an office. Like we just sat on the couch in the like communal area. So when actors and stuff would come in, they'd just be like, oh, we're here to meet the producers. And we'd be like, oh, yo, what's up? You know?
Oh, shit.
And they'd just be like, oh, shucks, is it you? And we'd be like, yeah, yeah. Fire, shuffle coming through, man. And like, man, we're excited to work with you. But that was all part of the like, make it more, do it like how we do it, you know? Just there is no egos or no, like, person at the top of the food chain and everyone's got a voice and everyone can be heard. And I think that set the table for the show to be made in, like, a spirit that it needed to be made because it was definitely a hard, hard shoot because we were pushing people to, like, make great and I think it shows, like everyone, when you watch it, it doesn't look like anything else that's been done in New Zealand
nothing.
For their budget. So it just shows that everyone fought like tooth and nail to get that thing humming, which we're like just grateful for, that we had that investment from the cast and the crew to just go like, yo, let's make this thing mean.
Mm. With the decision to bring Diggy on, you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
So he was the first one. Bro, what if you could have chose, like, and I don't, like, you're a Wellington brother.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Diggy is, he's the Panthers G now. Yeah. Like, he's that guy. And so when I found out that when it came up and it popped up, I was like, fuck, bro, what a great option to choose from. You could have gone anywhere with that one. But Diggy was perfect.
Yeah, man, because, that was Choice One, our, like, beat maker, our producer who did the music alongside Troy Kingy and Jonathan Crayford and Diggy. Like, once we explained the vision and what that role was, Choice pretty much straight off the bat was like, bro, it's got to be this dude, Diggy Dupe. He's Central Auckland. He's OG Grey Lynn. Like, he's the guy. You can't get anyone else. Like,
yeah.
If we got anyone else, Diggy would probably come after us. You know, be like, yeah. You can't be doing this stuff about Ponson B. Grey Lynn and not have me be the rapper, like, you know.
That's right.
So, and he killed it, man. Like, bro, like, because I would just write verses in the script, but it would be like, it'd be like a Puck verse or like a J. Cole verse that I wanted the energy to be. And then he would read that and go, oh, yo, sweet, I got you. Choice would give him the beat, bro, and then he'll just do his thing. Like, I'd be like, man, I was like blown away by his talent. And like Troy Kingy would do the same thing, and he would send us some, he'd like, we'd have a call of him at 1 o'clock, and then at like 3 in the morning, he'd send us like 3 options.
Sure.
It was, sure. Yeah, bro, the music was like, that's all Tom, though. I can't take any like credit for the musical like direction, because that was all Tom, man. He like knew it.
So, bro, like deep down inside, brother, like if you break it down to its purest, brother, and you look at it with a fine tuned coat, like you're like, bro, was there any chance that we're going to get a newer fire on there, bro?
Bro, I was keen, eh? Like, even, bro, I was spewing it, Choice, eh? Because I was like, yo, I didn't get on the show. At least let me get my P. Diddy on or freaking Jermaine Dupri on the soundtrack and just do it like, bro. Yo. Here we go.
That 2-3-2 fire right, yeah, there,
bro,
G.
I was like, bro, I was gutted it. I was genuinely gutted there. But I was down here and when they filmed it, because Choice, Timina Upper, and Tom, they did a phenomenal job of turning that album around in like 2 weeks, man. And I was down at Wellington when they were, and they recorded everything in like 3 days.
That's crazy.
I was in Willie, and I was, dang. How can I send my ad-libs up? I was messaging
you. You could have got on that shit.
Yo, man, I got to get... Bro, I was like, man, let me get my Cedric Entertainer like on, and even do like, you know, Kanye West. I was like, man.
You could have been that P. Diddy in the background, bro. Take that. It could have been you.
I wanted it. But, man, if we do another one, I've got to definitely jump on somehow.
We got to have another one, though, right? If we are, like, just brainstorming off the top, bro, like, there has to be, I mean, look at the success for it. Social media wise, bro, people are talking about it everywhere. I know that numbers are crazy out the gate. So, bro, there needs to be a second one somehow, right?
Yeah, we got development funding through New Zealand On Air and the Film Commission's fund. So we're like cooking up, but it's still like early stages. So we probably won't know anything really until next year, but you know, God willing, we can carry it on, because, like you said, man, season one was mean, and it had an impact. So hopefully we can carry it on. But with that, you know, there's pressure as well, because you have a mean rookie season and everyone's looking out for you.
Oh, look at Lonzo Ball.
Yeah.
I thought I'd just throw that in there with the Laker hater.
Yeah, man. It's their second year syndrome, man. So that's a cool pressure to have, though, you know.
But I think, bro, they did so much. I mean, the Bastion Point thing, like, reaches out to me. Mm. Like, what they did at Bastion Point and how they supported Tangata Whenua when, you know, the same people were trying to...
Yeah.
I think the Springbok tour, bro, like, shit.
Yeah, there's... And that's the main thing with our relationship with them, with the Panthers, with, like, Alec and Milani and Will and Tingy and even, like, Whamwana. Like, there's a lot of stories there that aren't even documented or anything, you know, that are just like from the time. And now, like, now that series one has been done, like a lot more of like family members, like my dad and stuff, and my mom and my aunties and stuff. They know kind of what we're doing. So they're like, oh, yo, yeah, you know, that reminds me, you know, when we came in the 70s, blah, 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 and they'll tell a story. And then you end up just getting all these stories, and then you start cooking from there.
See, what a great catalyst for that, though, bro. Mm. There's been nothing like that. This is like, honestly, those stories have been suppressed from all the anger and all the sadness, yeah. You know? But to have something like this, to bring those to the, to bring it to the boil, bro, it's been, bro, amazing, brother. And it, like, you guys probably didn't even think of that when you were doing it. Yeah. But now that it's done and you're looking at it and you hear all of these, like, I was talking to my mate and he was like, bro, my mum watched that and she told me everything that happened when she was dealing with everything. So yeah. We could still be here. I was like, wow.
Yeah, bro, we caught up with like, and the best thing about it is like with young people loving it. And then like we, when we've caught up with, like I caught up with Hone Haruira and his wife, Hilda, who were in Ngāti Matua, who were like, you know, they were allies of the Panthers as well doing, but they were kind of the more Tangata Whenua side of things. And they were like, yo, man, we watched the series 3 times. Like, you guys nailed it, man. Like, the costumes and everything and the vibe, the music was awesome. Like, it was real young, it was hip, it was cool. Like, hearing it from them, like, you know, and Tingy and stuff and Malani and them watching it, like, hearing, like, when she said she binge-watched it and she loved it, like, hearing from them that they loved it was, like, mean, because it could have bombed, you know? It could have bombed, but, like, as long as they loved it and then, like, my world loved it, that's kind of all that I made it for, really.
Yeah.
And then, like, because I know as well, my boys would have told me if it was freaking Elo as well.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, they did it with Jonah. That's for damn sure.
Oh.
But, no, nah, I'm honestly, like, truly, like, blessed and really, really honored to have been a part of telling this story. And it is a big story, and that's the whole point of it, man. It's just to start the conversations, eh? And hopefully now, you know, there's like a young islander somewhere now that can, because when I was coming up in 2002, 2003, there were no islanders that were producing and like making this kind of stuff. So hopefully there's, I mean, not hopefully, I know, I guarantee there's some young cats out there that are like, yo, we can make something like that and it'll be better, guarantee it. Like, you know, they'll be cooking up something down the line that will be, that'll raise the bar again, you know?
Brother, that's mean to me, straight. I think, yeah, bro, I mean, just bringing things out, bro, has just been so cool to see and to hear because, yeah, even there's been nothing like that. Like, it's every mamai that's out there, you know, on the history of New Zealand has kind of been suppressed because, you know, the perfect image of being what a Kiwi is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got to own some of these, you know?
Yeah. That's it, man, is what is a Kiwi now? Like, and it changes, you know, back in the 70s, islanders were the new kids on the block. And then kind of like in their early kind of 2000s is when like, you know, Africans and kind of Middle Eastern started rocking into New Zealand. And like now, bro, there's like, in Porirua, there's like a lot of South Americans rocking up here now, like, you know, making this home. So it kind of like, it just carries on, man. And what is a New Zealander? Like, you know, and then what is a Polynesian? You know, where if you're born and bred here, you're actually an island in New Zealand, in the Pacific Ocean. Does that make you an islander, you know? So it's like, what is, bro, because you talk to like some cats that go, yeah, my great granddad is Polish, bro, but they wouldn't even know like any words in Polish, you know, or like know where they're from in Scotland.
Or even the capital city of Poland.
Yeah. So, yeah. But that's it, man, because it is really kind of identity, with the Panthers is giving us a bit of pride and who we are, because we never really saw ourselves as winners, kind of other than on the sports field. Whereas we've got these young Pacific Polynesian radicals who decided to do something about it. And now, man, you just look at the young people now. Like, I don't know if you've seen the factual series on the Panthers on TVNZ, but man, there's some killers on there, man.
I would love to see, like, and I know that Ice wasn't a factual person, But bro, to get his backstory a little bit more would have been really, like, you know, like, would be something.
Mm.
I know a lot of us would, because a lot of us kind of, yeah, and that type of thing is another way you, like, you know, I'd be keen on, or a lot of people would be keen on. But yeah.
I know a lot of people, like, because like what we were saying, G, like, referencing all of those films, bro, a lot of us connect with those kinds of characters.
Yes.
And, like, we either connect with them on a personal, like, we went through the same thing, or we're just fascinated by freaking gangsters. And, like, hustlers, like boss gangsters like Ice are, like, you know, we don't really see that kind of gangster. Like, that's, he's more, because we molded him kind of more in that, like, mobster, godfather kind of, like, he's a businessman first.
Yeah.
You know? He's a businessman first gangster, not like, so, you know, he was in real estate and property and all of that stuff. But Bueller built that, man, like, with his bloody monopoly and all of the rent.
Charles Darrow.
Yeah, man. Like, bro, that's what I mean, man. He's just a freak. Like, he's a freak, man. And we're truly, like, privileged to have him and Frankie, bro. They're, like, probably the top, like, Pacific actors on the world. Like, them two and KJ Apa.
Hold up. We're missing The Rock here, my G.
I mean, from New Zealand, you know.
Oh, okay, I get you. I was like, don't disrespect the great one.
Yeah.
Okay, the most electrifying champ.
In his own, he's in his own lane, but like from like young New Zealand, from our corner, bro, it's like Frankie, Bueller, and KJ, you know? Those are the three kind of Polynesians from Aotearoa killing it on the world stage, and we had two out of three of them, man. It's a definite, like, blessing for us, man.
Bro, what's your Twitter game like, G?
I don't really use Twitter, right? Like, I can't even remember when my last tweet was. I did used to tweet, like, random stuff, like, when I was doing the rugby, like, small black stuff, because I was doing, like, fascinating things. But, bro, I wouldn't even, man, I didn't even go on Twitter. I should probably go on there, man, because I didn't even know what I was tweeting in 2011. I could get cancelled.
Bro, you're tweeting to Warren G, bro.
What?
Warren G hit you back, to
did he?
Yeah.
I don't even know. What did he tweet me?
He's just like, shot for the supporters.
Bro, you're kidding me, right?
Warren G, bro, you check your shit, G.
Oh, bro.
Straight up.
Oh, bro, I got to, like, screenshot that.
Okay, bro, you didn't answer him back, so he probably hates your guts right now, bro, so sort it out, eh? Bro, who's on your Laker Rushmore, G? Kobe?
Ooh. Wait, how many people are on Rushmore? Four? Oh, okay, cool. So Kobe's definitely there. Shaq. Because I'm not really, like, old, so I don't really know, like, I can't say, like, Kareem and them, because, I mean, you could easily say them because you know them. But, like, just going from when I was actually watching basketball would be Kobe, Shaq, I'm gonna go from when I actually, like, because the one that actually got me started liking the Lakers was Eddie Jones when he was Lakers.
He
was the guy. I know he wasn't, like, the greatest, but bro, Eddie Jones was my favorite. Like, I think I played with him on, like, NBA Jam or something. Like, he was like maybe the guy from Lakers. You know, he gets three. I think Eddie Jones was one. I just like Eddie Jones.
That's fine. And then, it's your Rushmore.
And then probably LeBron is, just even though he's only one, but I think LeBron's on the Rushmore for any club he goes to.
What's your Hurricanes Rushmore, G?
Ooh. JC. Cullen. Tama. And... ooh. Ari.
Ooh. What about your Tawa Prems, bro? Rushmore, go.
I have to go with my man Lotus, Lotu Nuku. Randall Bishop. I'll have to chuck my man Willie Lafayette in there. And I'm going to go our young gun, Kimura, Hawiti Parapara.
Bro, where's the best bakery, bro? Let's be honest.
Bro, I was so gutted that you came and you went to that grub of a bakery in the city, bro. Like, Pink Pineapple, bro, and Tower. But you came.
But we came to the Pink Pineapple. What are you talking about?
Did you go? Did you have the bacon and egg pie?
No, we didn't.
What did you have from there?
We had a steak and cheese, like we always do.
Yeah.
We had some chicken and chips, G.
Yeah.
And a donut.
I would rate, like, the Mungavan Bakery is pretty good too.
Okay.
But my bacon and egg pie from Pink Pineapple is on. There's a bakery in Avondale that does a pretty good mince and cheese pie.
Brother, you let's not talk about Auckland bakeries, okay, mate? Because you've only been here a couple of
I'll be watching your shit and putting that on my checklist. I'm like, oh, yo, that looks like that one on K Road that you went to. Like, that was that other one that's like a coffee pie.
Gee, bro, you're pretty deep into that, bro. That wasn't like an episode that we were like, that didn't do, or it was like a little short series that we did.
Yeah, like that was, so I've been watching your shit because I rate my like pie, and your pie feedback is on in terms of textures, and because I eat a lot of pies, man. But you know what? I would rate a good, like, I put a good, like, Big Ben pie up there, right? Like, Big Ben's,
brother, I think we're over. I think this interview is finished.
I still remember when you'd get a Big Ben pie in a Golden Circle for $2 those days. So.
Golden Circles, bro. Those are the... We've been trying so hard
Golden to... Pash, like,
bro, we've been trying so hard to get a sponsorship by them, eh?
Bro.
And if they just sent me a box, bro, I'll be happy.
Bro, they need to send me a box too. And they need to set up Golden Pash. Like, Golden Circle needs to get to the North Shore. Because I live on the shore, bro, and I never get Golden Pash unless I go out west or go south.
I've got the plug, G. I'll sort you out.
Yeah, bro.
I'll sort you out, bro. Hey, brother, thank you so much for your time, bro. I really appreciate it. And, like, it was good for me to kind of talk to the people that tell me shit and then be like, bro, this is what my bros are saying. And then, you know, like, bring some closure to that. You know what I'm saying?
That's cool, man. I love seeing the brothers, seeing how people, like, grinding and hustling and pushing, bro. And the material you're putting out, bro, your content is always, you know, you're inspiring cats to make the most of their talents, bro. Like, and you're branching out, man. Bro, the shack, you got to carry that on, man.
Thank you, bro. You know what, bro? The shack thing, like, I've never done anything like that. And I was very self-aware that I was like, bro, I'm not... My bro was like, just do it, G. You'll be the man. And I was like, bro, I don't know, G. This is my idea.
Yeah.
Like, let's see if we could do it. But I was like, can you get someone else? He's like, nah, G, you're the one. And I was like, oh, fuck. So anyway, thank you, bro. You're the first person that's ever said that.
You guys, yeah, bro, I love that shit, man. Like, I find that shit hilarious. Like, bro, all of you cats on the socials, bro, that are doing stuff now is inspiring, bro. Like, you, that just the norms cat. Like, I don't even know any of you guys. But Dre Squiller, bro, you guys are all killing it, man. Like, and no doubt, like, hopefully you guys can carry on in bigger and better things, man. Health and wealth, bro.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much for this time, G.
All good, man. Thanks for having me, cuz.